Okay, so what I want to talk about today is the question of when did our matzah become the cracker matzah that we know? And then the second half will be, well, if in fact this is not the original matzah, which as we'll see it almost definitely is not, can Ashkenazim have Svardi matzah? Because Svardim, real Svardim, like Taimanim and Moroccans will have, apparently not so much in Toronto, it's very hard to get, will still to this day have soft matzah. It's a thin-looking pita, lafa-looking thing. Can Ashkenazim have it? So for the historical component, I will base myself basically almost entirely on an excellent article in Chakira. You can find it on their website, called The Thick and Thin of the History of Matzah by Rabbi Dr. Ari Z. Zivotofsky and I think Rabbi Ari Greenspan, maybe also Rabbi Doctor, I'm not sure, on the history of matzah. Well, many of these proofs are found in the tshuvot that you'll find on the question of whether Ashkenazim can have soft matzah, but they've been collected, and more, in this article by Zivotofsky and Greenspan. Okay, so first to prove that the matzah that we know is not the original matzah. There's no way, there's just no way that the matzah that we have come to love is the original matzah, what would we look for? How would we know what the original matzah looks like? So the first non-proof, which is the first proof that everybody jumps to, but it really is a non-proof, is the korech proof. Right? The first attempt that everyone tries is, well, we know this part of the Seder called korech. That's based on a Gemara in number one, where there's a machlokes about how you eat matzah, maror, and karban pesach. Do you eat it together? Do you eat them separately? And the position of Hillel, as we'll see in a moment, was to be korech them yachad, to wrap them together. So many people try to point to that and say, well, what are you talking about? Based on that Gemara alone, isn't it enough to know that matzah was once soft? Because it implies that the karban pesach was eaten like a lafa. You had the matzah wrapped around, you had the barbecued meat in the middle, and some lettuce for salad, right? And that's it, right? And then you put it in, and so. So doesn't that prove that matzah was once soft, lafa-like? So it could be a proof, but not necessarily. So you look at number one, this is the Gemara. Mantan of the Shamatla, the mitzvos, ain mevatlos zu. Who holds that mitzvot, if done together, done simultaneously, will not cancel each other out? Hillel he. It's Hillel. Why? Ditanya, because the Braisa had said that Amar Alav al Hillel Shaya Korchon Mevat Achas Ve'ochlan. Hillel's practice, as we know, was to eat Pesach Matzah Maror all together, or, well, let's assume Pesach Matzah Maror. There's a Machlokes Rishonim whether that's true, whether it's all three of them, but let's assume Pesach Matzah and Maror. Fine. Shina Emar Amatzos Umarorim Yochlu Hu. Because it says you shall eat the Korban Pesach on Matzah and Maror, which implies all together. So the Gemara therefore says, you see that according to Hillel, you can fulfill the multiple mitzvot at the same time, and they don't cancel each other out. So you see that mitzvot don't cancel each other out. And Amar Rabbi Yochanan said that Cholkin of Chaver of Al Hillel, but the other Chachamim didn't agree. Titania, the Braisa said, Yochel Yu Karchon Bevas Achas Ochlan Geder Shel Ochlan, you might have thought that you're allowed to wrap them up in a sandwich. Talmud Lomar, Amatzos Merum Yochlu, Alfil Zebifnei Atzvo, no, you're allowed to eat them, or maybe you have to, or you should, eat them separately. Now, whether you paskin like Hillel or you paskin like Chachamim, both of them assume that it is physically possible to wrap them up together. The only question is that's the way you should eat matzah, maror, and pesach. But everyone agrees that that is a physical possibility. Try wrapping your hard matzah and see how that goes. See how long the matzah lasts. So the Gemara says, Maskiv l'ravashi hochyaf mayafilu. If you think that the Chachamim think that you aren't allowed to wrap them together, why would you say afilu, that even eat them independently, which sounds like everyone wants them to be wrapped lichatchila? And Ravashi hiked on a hachik sani. No, it goes like this. Yochol lo yotze b'yidei chavasa emgen karchom v'azachas v'ochlan k'derech shehillel ochlan. You might have thought that you're not yotze unless you eat them together like Hillel. Talmud lomar amatzos marom yochlu afilu zebifnei atzmo zebifnei atzmo. So Hillel thinks you need to eat it together. Chachamim think you don't need to, but either way, physically, it is possible. But now that we don't know who the halacha is like, because we didn't say it firmly like anybody, so we know what we do. Mevarach achil as matzah v'achil, v'hadir mevarach achil as mar v'achil, v'hadir achal matzah v'chaz v'adi adodi, bilo bracha zeichan mikdash kehila. So first we have the matzah, then we have the maror, then we have the korech. Okay, fine. So, from this, You might have said that here we have an easy proof that matzah must have once been soft enough that you could wrap it around the maror, wrap it around the carbon pesach. However, that's not necessarily true. And for two reasons that's not true. Let me start with number three. The first reason is, even at your Seder, right, what part of your korech sandwich could you definitely wrap? Well, maror, right? Who said that what you're wrapping is the matzah? Maybe you're wrapping the maror. If you have a piece of lettuce, the piece of lettuce can go around your matzah and the carbon pesach, and that's the position of Rabbi Chananel. If you look at number three, Rabbi Chananel says, yeah, korech doesn't mean you wrap the matzah around. It was shaya korech hamoror ala matzah. You wrap the maror around. Now, parenthetically, this proves conclusively that they used leaves for maror, right, and not anything else, right? They used leaves, or right, which we know the Gemara, or the Mishnah already tells us that maror is lechatchila is a form of leaf, either romaine lettuce, iceberg lettuce, some sort of lettuce. So it's clear they're using leaves. But according to Rabbeinu Chananel, this is no proof because they're not wrapping the matzah; they're wrapping the maror. Second of all, korech doesn't necessarily mean wrap. It could just mean to make a sandwich, right? Just like it is in modern Hebrew, where
I would say that exactly is how we got this sandwich, because we have hard matzah and korech. That's how we invented the weird word sandwich, like korech.
Well, that's possible, but it's possible that it doesn't mean wraps. You look at the Aruch HaShulchan, and two, v'achar nozlan ha-matzah shlishes kedei l'kayim ba-mitzvah v'shamin ha-maror bein ha-matzah v'korchon yachad. Korech could also mean you just sandwich it together. So that's not a proof. Now, and that's what they note in number four, right? While the root of korech is often used to mean wrap, it can also have the meaning of surround. For example, right? He said, where would you prove that in Tanakh? A walled city is called a krach because it is surrounded by a wall, right? It's not wrapped by a wall, it's surrounded. And the hard binding surrounded a book is called a kricha. This korech could involve surrounding a mar with hard matzah, much as the city is surrounded by a hard wall. That got that section of the korech offers no proof one way or the other as the kind of matzah used. So the korech, while that's the first proof you run to, is not necessarily a proof. However, as we'll see, it is clear that the matzah they had was soft, and therefore, even if this doesn't prove it conclusively, it seems very clear that what they were doing was making a lafa. Now, not according to Rabbeinu Chananel, but it was still soft matzah, right? This isn't a proof against, it's just not necessarily a proof. Everything from here on in is a proof, and some of these are quoted by Rav Asher Weiss in his Truvot on the topic, but as we'll see, there are some really good proofs. So, for example...
So you wouldn't say Rabbeinu Chananel probably using hard matzah?
No. Rabbeinu Chananel is clearly not using
soft matzah.
It may be what he thinks it is, right? That was the... I don't know. That's what he thought it was. I don't know.
Okay.
Right? Just like you have, you have regular sushi with the rice on the outside, and then, you have... Or seaweed on it. You can either put the seaweed on the outside, you put the rice on the outside, so you can put the green on the outside, you put the laugh on the outside, whatever, you know. It doesn't prove one way or the other. I don't know. Maybe it's a health thing. I don't know. You have the green. I have no idea. Okay, fine. Shine.
But is this soft matzah leaven? Because we're not eating
leaven. No. It's not leaven.
So you said it's like...
It just rises less, right? We should clarify. Now, what would it be, right? It would just be... matzah, it would just be grain, which you baked into bread, which didn't rise long enough to be considered having risen, right?
That's what regular matzah is.
But it's hard. There's, right, it could just be soft, like a not fully risen pita, right? Like, you know, it looks basically like a pita or a lafa, just thinner, right? Like thinner and you know, not as fluffy. But basically,
what,
now...
What?
Like egg matzah? No. Soft, like a lafa.
Like egg matzah.
No, not soft like that. Like soft, like you can wrap it, like a pita.
Are they so hard because they're cooked so long?
No, so short. Okay, so how did our matzah... Okay, so we'll do this now, even though we'll come to it later. Our matzah, hard matzah, how does it get to this point? It's basically, you put it in the oven for about 15 seconds, not even, I don't know, nothing. Right? At extremely high temperatures, and it just flattens into this hard rock, right? This cardboardy whatever, right? But Svardi, Temani matzah, if you find it, is fluffy. You know, not like fluffy like bread, not that risen, right? But it's soft. It's like a wrap. You know, think of a wrap, right? Very thin, but soft.
And not risen,
right? That's what it is. It's a wrap. Not quite as thick as a lafa, but, you know, that's what it is. We'll see. It's not that thin, necessarily. We'll see that there will be discussions of it being a tefach thick, right? Right? That's thick, right? This is big. And so now you can't really get it in Toronto. I asked this, the rabbi of was it Magen David, and he said you can't really get it here. And I talked to friends in Eretz Yisrael. It's very hard to get. Even like it's just very expensive because, well, for the reason we're going to see in one moment, it really is hard to get. Even if you're Sephardi and you really want to have it, it's not so easy to get your hands on. But theoretically, historically, what matzah seems to have been was that some sort of soft wrap that just hadn't risen enough to be chametz and not hard matzah. Now, what are the proofs? So I gave you, right, I've organized it by topic. So here, and these are, like I said, from Zivotofsky and from Greenspan. So number one, mold, right? The proof of mold. So how long does it take for bread to get moldy? I don't know, a few days, a week, 2 weeks, depends on how hot it is, I don't know, depends on the time of year, right? Depends on what the heating in your house is, moisture, all those things. How long does it take for matzah to get moldy?
A couple of years,
if that. It just never. Like, it sits in your house, and you use it for Shalosh Shudas, for Lech HaMishnah, forever, right? It just goes and goes and goes, forever, right? So there's a long sugya, Psachim Dav Zayin, but I gave you the upshot of it in Shulchan Aruch, number five here. Shulchan Aruch says as follows. Matzah pas b'pesach b'veis. So if you found pas, right? Now, that's a generic word for bread or matzah. So you find it on your house. Ve'ene yodea im chametz u'matzah. So now here's proof one. There's two proofs that emerge from this Gemara. One is, you don't know, looking at it, whether it's matzah or chametz. So first of all, our matzah, it's very simple. I understand. Someone asked me a shayla today. He said, right, there are those weird matzahs that says these are chametz and not for Pesach, right? where they made our flat matzahs just chametz, they let it rise or whatever, or they used flour that had already been wet and therefore was whatever. It's chametz. He said, can you eat that before, you know, Erev Pesach? I said, I mean, or what, you know, Erev Pesach, from whenever your minhag is not eating matzah. I said, of course. Right? It's bread. The fact that it looks like our matzah is irrelevant. If it's chametz, it's chametz. Right? But that's not normally what we mean. Right? Normally, right, they're talking about you go into your house, you find bread, and you don't know whether it's bread which has risen sufficiently to be chametz or it's matzah. Now, our matzah, you do not confuse with your loaf of bread. It just doesn't happen. You have a fluffy loaf of challah, and you have matzah. There, you know which one is which. So first proof is that matzah and chametz have to look, right? Have to be look similar enough that it is plausible that you actually wouldn't be able to tell whether something is chametz or matzah by looking at it, right? So that's proof, right? That's the first part of this proof from the Gemara. The second part is the Gemara says, right? Shulchan Aruch summarizing the Gemara says, "Mutar afilu ba'achila does linen bazar basra." You assume that it's matzah because that's what you have in your house on Pesach, and you're allowed to eat it. The imhum upash harbe. But if it is really, really moldy, that it couldn't have gotten this moldy since the beginning of Pesach, so then it is chametz. But if it's late enough in the holiday, it's the seventh day of Pesach, it's the eighth day of Pesach, whatever it is, and now it could be that it's moldy from the beginning of Chag, so if your minhag is to bake fresh matzah every day, tolan lahakel, so then you assume lahakel afilu muupash harbe, even if it's very moldy, shanu tolan lomar b'chol yom afa pascham and asnu alav, because we assume that what happened, that you piled up your matzahs one after the other, so every day they were really, really hot, and we know when things are hot, they become moldy faster, and therefore, lefichal harbel is apesh, and that's why it became moldy so fast. Now, without getting to all the details of this Gemara, what Shulchan Aruch is telling you is that if you have something which you can't tell whether it's chametz or matzah, and it's molded so much in the few days of Pesach, and you could explain why it got that moldy, so then it's right. It's mutter. You assume. I mean, if you want to eat it, fine. Right? You assume that it is matzah. But they're describing a matzah that could plausibly have been baked on Pesach itself, and is very, very moldy by the end, such that it looks like it's been molded from weeks ago, right? Or matzah, that doesn't happen to. Hard matzah does not get moldy, right? For years, it's not getting moldy by the end of Pesach. Bread gets moldy after a few days. So, proof number one and two is A, their matzah clearly looked like their bread, because they could confuse the two, and two is that it's the type of thing that becomes moldy after just a few days, which our matzah does not. Next proof, the size, as we mentioned before. So if you look at number 6, the Torah quotes his father, the Rush, and there's a quote in the Rambam as well, Adoni Avi HaRosh, all the cost of Enogin, Ba'ashkan of Itzarfas, La'asoz, Mi'isaron. Zecher lach me toda, Shayot, Mi'isaron, Mevi toda. The minog was to make matzah out of an isaron worth of flour, because that's how much you use for the lachmi toda, and since you bring a toda when you go out of prison, and on Pesach we're coming out of prison, we're coming out of slavery, so therefore they would zecher le toda, they would use an isaron worth of flour to make a lachmi toda. And the Mishnah Berurah writes in to make matzah zecher le toda. So look at Mishnah Berurah number 7. He says, Nagulah says, I am the sefer beis meir shem afavek al minog. Ms. Mayer isn't sure about this. And said in many places they don't have this minhag. Now what does that mean? The Mishnah Berurah says that even in his day, right, this is not so long ago, right? The Mishnah Berurah died in, right? Yisrael Meir Kagan died in what? In the mid-30s, 36, I think, 33, 36, something like that, right? I mean, he has an obituary in the New York Times. We're not talking a long time ago. He said even in his day, right, he's saying most places aren't making matzah with this much flour, but there are places that are. Okay, now, how big is that matzah going to be if you take an isaron? So if you look at number 8, so, Zivitovsky and Greenspan say as follows, even using the smallest opinion of the size of an isaron, would mean that a thin matzah, meaning a hard matzah like ours, made from 1/3 of an isaron, meaning, right, assuming you use an isaron for the 3 matzahs mitzvah, right, so then you use 1/3 of an isaron for 1 matzah, right, 1/3 of an isaron would be a matzah for the record books, many, many feet in diameter. Something not realistic, as it would not fit in the oven. This custom indicates that their matzah had to be significantly thinner than any modern matzah, right, in order to use that much flour, right, so if you're making it that thin, got to be huge. Presumably, that's not what's happening. They're making a thick bread, right? We all know if you make a thick challah, it uses a lot of flour for not so much bread. If you're making a thin wrap, right? The reason that wraps are healthier, right? The reason that a wrap, you know, if you're on a diet, like you have a wrap instead of a thick piece of bread, is because you feel like you're having a sandwich and you're having, like, I don't know, 1/5 or 1/10 the amount of flour that you're having a nice thick roll. So he said, which implies that if they're using so much flour, it must be a thick matzah. Well, this proves that they used thick matzah in the past. It does not definitively prove they used soft matzahs, right? Now, this just proves that it was, right, big, thick, not thin. And there are individuals today who make 3 hard, thick matzahs from one isaron. And furthermore, the lechem aponim and the beis hamikdash were each made from 2 isarons, which are allowed to be of a tervach thick, and they were matzah. Yet according to the Lechem Aponim expert, Professor Zohar Amar, they were most likely not soft and pliable, but rather like thick, edible crackers. So the size, at first glance, you might say, well, if it's that big, it must be thick. So it's true. Older matzahs were clearly thick. But as they note, theoretically, these could be thick, hard matzahs. It's a bit hard to bite into, but it's theoretically possible. Well, no, the wrappings, well, you could wrap the maror around it, right? You could still wrap the maror around it, or you can make a sandwich, right? So this doesn't prove, so the size proves, so the moldy thing proves, presumably, that it was soft, right? This proves that it used to be thick, probably soft, but not necessarily, because theoretically you could make, and at least in the case of the Lechem Aponim, you probably did make thick, crackery matzahs. Okay, next proof, the Afikoman proof. This one I love. The Ber Hetev quotes the Marshal as suggesting to put the afikoman between the kar and the keset, meaning under the pillow until you're ready to eat it. Now, sometimes kids do this. They hide it in the pillow. Now, what happens if you hide a hard matzah under the pillow that someone's leaning on? Right? It crushes, right? It's a terrible place to put a hard matzah. A soft matzah, if you put it, right, if you accidentally sit on a pita, basically nothing happens to it. Right? It says, with current hard matzah, such action would result in eating matzah meal for the afikoman. Clearly, Marshall was familiar only with soft matzah. This is actually an undeniable proof that soft matzah was generally used in the past. So again, the possible proof from Korech, but maybe not, because it could be that it's just a sandwich, or it could be that you're wrapping the maror, but it's a potential proof. The mold proof, the confusion proof, right, that matzah and bread seem to look similar, and the mold proof that it has to be the type of thing that can mold quickly, which our matzah is not. The size proof at least proves that it used to be thick matzah, but could be hard. And then the afikoman proof that you're sitting on this thing seems to imply that it is soft. Now, now the thickness, the third, the previous one, the size issue, the yisaron, doesn't necessarily prove that it was soft, because, okay, you could make thick, crunchy matzah. But there's even thicker matzahs that you cannot possibly make if they're hard. So look at number 10, Shulchan Aruch writes as follows. Ein ozen srikin hamitzu yorin, hainu letzar bepaskim, and chayva ofra. You don't make all these fancy schmancy matzah and all these designs. Fine. Aval kol masha ozen mosav b'masrik shlo yitavach. Right, you do it with a comb, right, so it doesn't, you know, have air bubbles. V'chein masha menakvin hamatzah is mutter. Fine. U'mikol makom tov lemar la'asosan shelo lahashos b'hem. But you should make them quickly. The Rama writes, v'yesh la'asos hamatzahs rikikin v'lo pas ava kishar lechem ki'in ha'rikikin memar l'hachmatz. You should use thin matzah. Okay, now how thin is thin? So I gave you the summary in 11. So, however, the lack of a specific thickness in the Rama statement might lead one to believe that the Rama is advocating paper-thin, cracker-like matzot, similarly to what we use today. That's not the case. The Ber Hetev cites the Beis Hillel that the custom was to make matzah thinner than normal bread and to make them an etzba thick, meaning thicker than even today's soft matzah, right? The Prima Gadim says that an etzba is the width of a thumb, and that this was for the matzah that was ground to make matzah meal. Apparently, his matzah was hard, and thus the finger-thick matzah could not realistically be eaten, so he assumes that such thick matzah was ground, implying that there was thinner matzah that was made to be eaten. So as we will see, having more than one style of matzah was not uncommon. Right? So you have this description of this super-thick matzah, but that was, right, super-thick hard matzah, but the super-thick hard matzah was matzah meal matzah. Right? The Rama is just saying making it thinner than that. Right, but the Rama isn't right. But it sounds like the way the Marshal is describing it is that once you get to a certain thickness of a thumb, he assumes no one can bite into that thing. So therefore, it must be matzah meal, right? The matzah they ground up. But that implies, because the Rama says lechatchila, you should make matzah thinner than that, right? But b'di'evet, he assumes that people are making matzah which they're actually going to eat at etzba thick. But the Marshal told you that it's. The Prima Gadim tells you it's physically impossible to eat hard matzah, which is a tevach thick, and therefore when they made, an etzba thick, it's impossible to eat it, right? So he says the etzba thing, hard matzah, was matzah meal matzah, but you could make other etzba thick matzah, which is edible. But how could you make it edible? That's thick for a hard one, so it must be that's soft, right? That's what he tells you. He says, right, there were people making etzba thick hard matzah, which was inedible, but that was for matzah meal. There were other matzahs that are technically kosher, which are edible, which are an etzba thing, and the Rama says make it thinner than that, right? But he told you that the etzba thick kosher matzahs could not be hard because they're not edible, which must mean that they're soft, right? Because you can eat an etzba, right? You can't eat, right? Imagine, it's taking four matzahs, right? Not piling on top of each other, it's baking them together into a block, right, of about whatever it is, right, I don't know, about an inch thick, let's say, right, and trying to bite that thing, right, it is soft. That's why the Marshal says it must be something that you ground. But the etzba thick matzah that you actually ate, right, that had to be soft. Okay. I don't know. Maybe it would. I mean, we put them in these ridiculously hot ovens. I guess it's possible. I don't know. I mean, apparently they did it, right? I don't know. You can experiment. Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know. And I don't know how hot their ovens are. Yeah, it can be as thick as a tefach. Right? I think it's a tefach. Right, which obviously is soft, right? It's obviously, did I put it here? I don't think I put it here. But yeah, right, it could be, right? Now, once you're getting to a tefach, right, it's soft. It has, I mean, it's, okay, fine. So, what? Right, but thick and thin ones are still both, I mean, what are they? It's a difference between, you know, 2 millimeters and, like, 5 millimeters. We're not talking, right? I mean, you don't see it like, you know, you don't see it this thick. You see it like, you know, there's the super thin, right? What is it? In New York, it's the, at least, it's like the super thin is what, the Popeye, I think, and the Lakewood ones are a bit thicker. I don't know why, but whatever, it is what it is. So what do we have here? So we have, clear proof that they were thick, right? And not thin like we have. It's first of all this Ramah, right? We're just telling it's only the Chatchila that they should be thin, but clearly at some point they were thicker. And the Minog of making it out of an Isaron. Now the Isaron proof doesn't prove that it was soft, it just proves it was thick. This proves that it was thick, because the Prima Gaudium tells you that they were making matzo that if they were hard, were inedible. Therefore, they must not have been hard at that thickness. So they clearly were soft. We had the Korech possible proof. We had the mold proof, that clearly you're talking about something that can mold fast, which our hard matzo cannot. And the pillow proof, right? The putting the afikoman in the pillow where it's not cracking proof, where clearly it's soft. But just to point historically, right, what's interesting is now what generations are we talking about? Because if we want to talk historically, right, these are not just early sources. Some of them are early, right, very early. But we're talking, even the Mishnah Brura, who's in, you know, the 20th century, is telling you that there are places which are still making these super thick matzahs. So even the Mishnah Brura, right, less than 100 years ago, was telling you that he doesn't know, that even he's not aware of people only making thin matzah. He knows that most places are making thin matzah the way we know it, but even in his day, people are still making thick matzah. So the uniform thin matzah that we have is really, really new. But even this soft matzah, right, the Prima Gaudium is writing in the up to the end of the 18th century, and he's telling you that while there are thick matzahs that are hard that exist for the purpose of making matzah meal, there's also thick matzahs that are edible, meaning soft matzahs, right? So still in the time of the Prima Gaudium, who's, right, Ashkenazi, is telling you that even in the 18th century in Ashkenaz, right, people are eating soft matzah, right? Because he knows of thick matzah which is used only for matzah meal, right? But what? We're already talking amongst gebrochs. I left out the gebrochs proofs, but the gebrochs proof is part of it, right? The whole gebrochs sugya is part of the proof that it was soft. The early minhagim emerged from versions of this, but I left it out because of complexity. You can read the whole article. It's a fascinating article. I've just put a bunch of the proofs. So you're talking, even the Berhetev is also Ashkenazi, right? You're talking 17th, 18th century, even in Ashkenaz, it seems like people still are aware of soft matzah, right? So historically, it's not like, it's one thing to say that soft matzah was used in the time of the Gemara, and then Sephardim continued using it, and Ashkenazim stopped in the 12th century. Right? So then it'd be a minhag of 800 years. Because the Prima Gaudium still implies that Ashkenazim in Europe were using soft matzah into the end of the 18th century, right? And Mr. Brewer tells you that at least thick matzah was being used into the 20th century, right, in Europe. So we're not talking, right? So that which we feel like we have a minhag l'dorei doros, right, that Ashkenazim used thin, hard matzah, right? In the 20th century, we know they were still using thick matzah. In the 18th century, we know they're still using, they're at least aware in Ashkenaz of soft matzah. There is a movement towards thin matzah, which is hard, right? But it's not exclusive. They're still Ashkenazim. They seem to be eating soft matzah. One of the proofs as well, now on the flip side, not that it had to be hard like we have it, but that so far we've proved that there was soft matzah present. But as we already saw in the Prima Gaudium, just because there was soft matzah being used in the Ashkenaz through the 18th century doesn't mean that they only used it. As the Prima Gaudium tells you, they had hard matzah also. Right? They had hard matzah which they used for matzah meal. They had hard matzah, presumably, which they used for eating. They also seem to have had soft matzah. But at some point, there also seemed to be two different types of matzah, that people would have hard matzah and soft matzah. Now, what is the first record that we have of hard matzah? Right, let's flip it now. Right, so far we proved that soft matzah seems to have existed in Ashkenaz till very late. Right, now what's the first proof that people are making hard matzah? So you would want to say, well, it's very new, right? It's like 17th century. It's not true. The earliest proof we have is the 8th century. Right, so let's flip it now. Right, there seems to have been at least soft matzah in Ashkenaz through the 18th century, but there was also hard matzah in the time, even among Svardim, or let's say pre-Ashkenaz Svard, as early as the 8th century. What is this? So this is the Eruv proof. okay.
Cube number 12?
No. So we're going to we're going to look at the Aruch HaShulchan, and then we're going to look at the Eruv summary in their article. So you look. Should I come back to it? You're right. Let's do the freshness proof, and then we'll come to the Eruv proof in a moment. So the freshness proof, the Aruch HaShulchan number 12. He says it like this. Yosher near lefi as nighty mishum dezei yadua shebizman hakadmon lo yu ofen kol hamatzos kol dem haPesach elai ofen mechol yomi mei haPesach pasul yom ze ad shatur kolsev ledavar chidush vezei lashonov ani rizim bebarcelona shemedaktikim sheofen kol ma shetrichen lamoed mikol dem hamoed shemisarev imo mashu michomet yizbatal kol dem yisrael kan loshara. So there's a minog. There were some people who used to bake fresh matzah every day. The tour says that that in his time in Barcelona, people started to have a chumrah, that they should bake all the matzah before Pesach. Now, why would they bake all the matzah before Pesach? Because we have a halacha. The chametz is in batal fuel be'elef, right? Chametz is never nullified on Pesach. But if it's before Pesach, it is batal. So they wanted to make all their matzah before Pesach, because if rachmana litzlan, a little bit of chametz fell in, so on Pesach, it would never be batal. But if it was Erev Pesach, so then it would be batel. So they made all their matzah before Pesach. V'zeu k'minag shalanu, and that's what we do. Because of zeh l'davar chidush. And he said this was a chidush. V'lochein k'shayu ofen b'chal yom. V'lochol paschama. And the Aruch HaShulchan says, well, but I don't get it, right? Because he said, why would you bake every day to have hot bread? K'en lama yigar matzah mitzvah shalo yofo s'samach la'achilu v'haino achar chatzot. Right now, all those proofs leave that aside. The last line is what's important for us. The Aruch HaShulchan said, well, wait a second. What did the Torah say? Why did people make matzah before Pesach? Because they wanted to move out of Chametz. But there were other people who were medaktik in the opposite direction, to always make fresh matzah. Said, I don't understand. Why would you make fresh matzah? Our matzah, the second it's out of the oven, tastes as terrible as it does a year later. Right? So the Aruch HaShulchan said, it must have been that their matzah didn't look like our matzah. It must have been thick, and presumably soft. It doesn't say soft, but at least thick, but presumably soft. Because soft bread, we know, is better fresh. Matzah doesn't matter when you make it. And so again, the fact that matzah seemed to at some point in history have tasted better fresh, right, and actually changed in taste over time implies that it was once soft, like bread, right? Maybe it was wrapped. You might have been able to sit on it for afikomen. All of that implies that there was soft matzah. The fact that it gets moldy, right, the fact that you could make it that thick and it would still be edible, all those things point in the direction that it was soft, and even through the time of the Prima Gautam, even to the 18th century, people are still using soft matzah in Ashkenaz. Again, that doesn't mean there wasn't hard matzah. The Prima Gautam tells you there was both hard matzah and soft matzah. Just hard matzah tended to be used for the equivalent of matzah meal. Maybe you also ate hard matzah, but soft matzah seemed to exist for a very long time. Now, what about hard matzah? So, hard matzah does also have a very storied history. So if you look in number 13, this is the Eruv. The earliest source we know of that mentions making an Eruv for an entire year is Halacha Ksuva, usually attributed to the 8th century Rav Yehudoigo. There it is stated that if one wants to make an Eruv on Erev Pesach the whole year, we're talking here about Eruv Chatzeros, right, or Shit of Mavos, doesn't really matter, right? And this is what we do, right? The minog in most places in the world is that we don't make an Eruv every week. We don't make an Eruv Chatzeros every week. What do? We make it once a year. We put a box of matzah in a communal place, right? And that is our Eruv for the entire year. We're mezakeh to the kehillah, right? We do it through schos to the whole world, right? Everybody who's going to ever be in our city. And therefore, we're all joined together and we rely on the Eruv. Parenthetically, if you're ever in the place, right? This happens less in a city the size of Toronto, but it happens in Yishuvim, right, where there's only like one shul and everyone knows where the Eruv is. If you are really busy at Erev Shabbos and, or something happens and your bread turns out to be moldy, you don't have Lecha Mishnah, right? That matzah belongs to you. You're allowed to walk into the shul and take the matzah out of the box. It's yours, right? Everyone in the city has equal rights to it, and this happens, right? And, you know, I've known Rabbanim who, when someone came over to them and said, oh, I was stuck in my, you know, I wasn't supposed to be here for Shabbos, but I was stuck in traffic, I'm all alone, I don't have any food, I don't really want to go out to eat, I'm exhausted, I just want to eat at home, but I don't have Lechem Mishnah, the Rav will say, what do you mean? Right there, those, you can just take that, right? And then we'll have to obviously replace it. But barring cases like that, our minhag is to leave a box of matzah the whole year, because it doesn't go bad, right? So this way, we don't have to worry about it, we leave it for a whole year, and there were places that left it for multiple years at a time. Our minhag is to do it once a year. Now, when did that start? So, in the halachic tzuvah, in the 8th century, they already started making matzah for the Erev Chatzerot that they would use for an entire year. Now, that tells you that while it may be true that soft matzah existed for a very long time, there also existed as well hard matzah for a very long time.
Hard unleavened bread.
Right, something. Now this could be the matzah meal. No, in a chalami. Now it could be the matzah meal bread. You don't know what it is. But it's clear that the notion of hard matzah is not like new. It did exist. It wasn't necessarily what most people ate, but it did exist. Now it sounded like they made it, this wasn't the normal matzah they made. It sounds like it was the matzah they made specifically for the Erev. But just the proof that there was such an idea, it wasn't like, just lest someone say, well, really you should have hard thin matzah because the Gonim just didn't realize you can make matzah that thin. No, they were fully aware that you could make hard matzah. They did make hard matzah for special purposes, right? When they needed something that couldn't spoil for the year, they made hard matzah. There is that if one wants to make an Erev and Erev Pesach for the whole year, the Chacham should take from each and every household a handful of flour, knead, and bake it into a cake or two, making them exceptionally hard so they will not spoil and can be stored. The bread was then placed in one of the houses. Well, this source does not call the baked item matzah. It was prepared in Erev Pesach, and thus indicates that already over 1,200 years ago, the concept of a very hard, long-lasting, cracker-like kosher lePesach bread existed. It also seems to indicate that their standard matzah was not this hard, cracker-like substance, right? So you get two things at once. One is that they did have a notion of hard matzah, but it was an exception. Rav Yudai goes out and doesn't say, go and buy your normal matzah and leave it. He said, no, if you want to last a whole year, then go out of your way to make the cardboard that we now know as matzah. Right? That's not what he's normally using. It's just they're aware of this thing that could be done. In the 15th century, Austria, the Elekat Yosher, wrote that the Erev was made from matzah. It was made specifically in Erev Pesach and was huge, with a hole in the center and hung in the winter residence of Israel, the Truman Adeshen. Right, so this continued. Right, they did it nice and artistically. It would hang on a right decoratively in the Truman Adeshen's house. He also reports that once happened that the Erev broke because it got moldy. And Rav Israelite first used bread for one Shabbat and then made matzah to last until the next Pesach. Mari Weil, in 15th century Germany, also calls the Erev bread, which he insisted be placed in the house and not shul. That's a different discussion for another time. Matzah. The conclusion seems inescapable. In 15th century Austria and Germany, standard matzah was dry enough to theoretically remain edible for an entire year if it was hung in the air. So they point out that while in the 8th century, the matzah that was used was unique, and most matzah could not last a year, by the time you get to 15th century Germany, the standard matzah could last all year. Right? So there may have also been soft matzah, but there were places where the standard matzah was becoming hard, was becoming long enough to last. Maybe. Well, probably. But the next proof is a bit strange. They write, the most surprising evidence comes from Yemen. Yosef Kafach wrote, then Yemen, the city rabbi would make an Erev on Chol HaMoed Pesach for the whole city for the year. He would bake several small loaves, right, chalok tanot of matzah, and put them in a high window in the shul. And he testifies that such was the practice of his grandfather in the late 19th century. Now this creates a problem, because while there are places in the Jewish world that we have long histories of hard matzah, Yemen was not one of them, right? Taimanim only used soft matzah. So what was Rav Kavach talking about? That in Taiman, right, where they used soft matzah, that they're using the Erev for multiple months at a time, right? They're just leaving the matzah there for multiple months at a time. So they did an experiment. This called for an experiment, because Yemeni Jews to this day all bake soft matzah. So using a thread, we hung a standard pita for 3 months to see what would become of it. It quickly dried out, but never became moldy. It remained completely edible, such that upon taking it down, we found that it could be eaten as is and was simply like a dried cracker. Alternatively, because in the old days bread was often eaten dipped, we dipped it into thick porridge and became soft and took on almost its original constitution. So we note that while soft matzah cannot last a year, soft matzah in the Middle East, if you hang it on a thread outside, right, could in fact last several months. So just because people were leaving matzah for several months at a time doesn't prove that their matzah is hard, right? Leaving it for a whole year does prove it's hard. The fact that you're leaving it for a few months doesn't prove it's hard, because you can do that even with soft matzah. Okay. Then they note, right, that as we said, just because there seems to have been soft matzah doesn't mean there wasn't also hard matzah. We already noted this above. By mid-18th century, it seems that in Ashkenaz there were both thick and thin matzahs. The Adnei Paz explains that thick matzah needs a hotter oven than do thin ones. Therefore, the thick matzah, called rib matzah, because it will be grated with rib eisen, with a hand grater, into matzah meal, should be baked first. He concludes by noting that unfortunately, new bakers have started baking the thin matzah first and bake the thick one when the oven was already begun to cool. Again, it is clear that they had more than one type of matzah. And therefore, their conclusion is, the data presented above paint a picture of several factors playing a role in yielding the type of matzah used today. It is likely that in the Talmudic period, matzah was thicker and softer and resembled standard bread, baked by being smacked onto the side wall of an oven and being baked there, right? How did you used to make bread, right? If you ever go to a lafa, right, the fancy lafas, and they're really making it there, right, it sticks on the wall of this hot stone oven, that's how you make it. Removing it after it was fully baked, yet before it falls off to be burned in the coals below, is a skill termed by the Gemara with Diyas Hapas. All this is impossible with hard matzah. In the period of the Rishonim, there was a move, for halachic reasons, to bake longer-lasting matzah, probably resulting in thinner and harder matzah. This process was driven by the halachic chumrah to bake all matzah before Pesach to take advantage of bittul. This is because on Pesach itself, chametz is not batel, annulled by the majority of non-chametz bread, but prior to Pesach it is batel, and thus this approach alleviated the concern of a tiny bit of chametz in the matzah. The march towards ever drier and thinner matzah continued unabated. A sociological factor has been suggested as a partial explanation. The social upheavals that were part of the impetus that led to the introduction of machine matzah might have had a role in the thin matzah. As the country population migrated to the huge urban centers in the early 18th century, people no longer baked the small quantities a family needed. Baking became centralized and done in large quantities. In Ashkenazic lands, as this happened, there was supposedly a move to bake pre-stale matzah. I love that explanation of our matzah, right? I.e. very thin, hard and dry. However, we have found nothing in the written record to support this claim, and as was seen in early 14th century Spain, they were already baking all their matzah before Pesach and was lasting through the holiday. Not only did the matzah 700 years ago last a week, many places were already using matzah as an Eruv, and thus they had matzah that was edible after a year. Urbanization in the last 300 years cannot be seen as a significant factor in the introduction of modern thin pre-stale matzah if the matzah they had was already lasting a year. Nonetheless, it cannot be argued that in Europe the production of matzah became centralized and blazed out of Yemen remained until today a task in each home. Rather, it seems that the final stage in the evolution of the cracker thin matzah was because of another halakhic chumrah, the concern that with thick matzah was more difficult to prevent and to ascertain chimus. As seen above, the Ashkenazic authorities in the 17th to 19th centuries were concerned about thick matzah becoming chametz and made a concerted effort to produce thinner and thinner matzah from drier and drier batter. This became easier to do thanks to the powered machines that could knead very dry batter. But the process took time, and for centuries, probably the 17th through the 19th, there were two types of matzahs being made, thick to be grated into matzah meal and thin to be eaten. The super hard, thin matzah, such as used today, can simply not be rubbed against a grater the way a potato is ground. Eventually, possibly thanks to commercial production of matzah meal, and probably in the early 20th century, the ultra-thin, cracker-like matzahs that are ubiquitous today became the sole matzah. And probably in the early 20th century, the ultra-thin, cracker-like, The ultra within crackling measure that ambiguous day became the Sol Matzah. The historical process seems to have occurred in both Ashkenazic and Sephardic lands, with a single significant exception being Yemen, where soft matzah continued to bake daily, and the Yemenite Jews continued this until today. The development of the modern thin, hard matzah thus seems to have been driven solely by halachic concerns rather than sociological or practical issues. So their conclusion is as follows. It is clear that original matzah seems to have been soft and thick. However, through the generations, hard matzah was introduced, right? Both in its thick form and its thin form. We know that already from the Halach Ptuvot, the Erev that was lasting a year. However, the move, because of Chumrot, of baking before Pesach, and being worried about all types of different Chumrot in terms of Chimot, pushed Poskim to move away from the thicker matzah, both the soft and the hard kind, right, to thinner and thinner matzah. As we got machines, it became easier and easier to just make thin matzah, and we no longer needed to make thick matzahs for matzah meal. So we eventually came to a situation where basically all of our mitzvah is thin and hard crackers. But the historical evidence seems to be that the original matzah was soft and thick. Already by the 8th century, there also existed hard matzah. Right? In the Middle Ages, there were some matzahs which were hard and thick, some which were hard and thin, and possibly even some which were soft and thin. Even in the time of the Pre-Megadim, he seems to be aware of etzba think matzah, which is edible. So it seems like coexistent to these matzahs, there were soft matzah and hard matzah and thin matzah and thick matzah. Right? And it's only in the last very recent period, with machines that make our matzah so thin and so quick and so easy, that we've moved basically exclusively to thin, hard matzah. But it's very, very recent that we gave up at least on the thick, hard matzah, and not even so old that there existed soft matzah, even in some Ashkenazi lands. And again, you see that from the Erev, you see that from freshness, you see that from the mold, you see that from the sitting on the afikoman, and all those different proofs, you see that soft matzah persisted, right? Thick matzah persisted even past soft matzah, and it's only very recently that we only see thin, hard matzah that we find today as the exclusive type of matzah, but it doesn't seem to be that we have to halachically. It was just a function of a series of chumrot and the advantages of technology. Okay, now nowadays, basically, the only people who still have soft matzah, right? Thick, hard matzah, nobody cares about, right? No one wants to eat that. But soft matzah, so Teimanim still have it. So can an Ashkenazi eat it? So if all this historical analysis is true, so your first, you might say, yeah, an Ashkenazi can eat it, because there is no such minhag not to eat it. It was a sort of accident that through a series of different chumrot that we had, we started baking all our matzah before Pesach. Once we were baking it before Pesach, we started making it harder. And then we had chumrot that we wanted to make it thin. So once we want to make it thin, so we made it harder. Okay, fine, but that's just a series of chumrot. But no one ever said you had to. We just wanted to be really, really careful. But if someone else makes a thin, soft matzah, so fine. Why shouldn't we be able to eat it? There is no Ashkenazi minog not to eat it. It's just that we don't, right? And it's not even that old, right? It's not even so old that we don't have it. It's just like industrialization allowed us to keep all our chumrot, so suddenly we only have thin matzah, but thin hard matzah. But if someone else made thin soft matzah, or even thick soft matzah, what's to say that it's usur? You know, let's go to that. The person who took that position is Rav Schechter. Rav Schechter, if you look in 17, says, I gave you his handwritten letter, right, tells you, yes, in Ashkenaz, there is no such minhag to not eat soft matzah. It's just that we don't, because of a series of historical accidents, and combined with chumros, right, and technology, and all types of things that we've seen. Okay, fine. But lahalacha, you want to have a soft matzah. Now, I should note, just because we're going to see Rosh Hashanah things you're allowed to, an Ashkenazi allowed to have soft matzah, doesn't mean you can have any soft matzah. But he notes, and I talked to Masood. He said that he's seen some of the soft matzahs come in. Many of them he thinks are problematic, right? That they're actually, there's like flour on them and, right, so there are problems with some of the soft matzahs that are produced. So just because, in theory, you can have soft matzah, doesn't mean all soft matzah is good. If you're going to have soft matzah, if you're going to bother with Rav Schechter, make sure you get good soft matzah. You don't want to be eating chametz on Pesach, it would be very bad. But in principle, if you get one of the good Hechter, Rav Schechter thinks it's fine. So if you look But he wrote this in Purim Katan Shnat Tav Shnayin Aleph. B'Shulchan Aruch Arachaim Semen Kuf Samaches Zayin Katan Amechaber Shekayom something. I really shouldn't have put it handwritten, but okay, fine. Right, so okay, these thin crackers are mizonos, right? Unless you go down, right? Elam can kavu malena zasud. Unless you use them for a meal, the etel Ashkenazim tamid nagul lechol matzah v'ezel sheim kaze. Ashkenazim always used hard matzah. The kazav achronim shavaleil haseder pshita shavrechazam amoti. This hard matzah is definitely amoti. Because that's really when we're kovei suda, just like you are on a cracker, so you would wash. But Svardim, many will have like sponge-like soft matzah, not Ashkenazi hard matzah. And it seems that an Ashkenazi can eat them. The Maskot Ramah lechot Pesach shenagul lasos rekikin al pipshuto loratam or Avim, right? Because the Ramah says the minog is to make them like crackers, right? Right. But all he means is that they should be thick, meaning pachod mi tefach, upachod afil mi aspan, thinner even than a finger. V'chacham echad rani shachinu lehedi mishne brura, and that's what Mishne Brura says, right? All the Ramah is saying is that the minog Ashkenaz was to have thin matzah, but not necessarily hard matzah. And you're allowed to be mekayim mitzvah matzah with soft matzah. There's no problem of changing your minog. It's like changing the color of your parochet. From red to blue. Came Pashtun said, there is no minog Ashkenaz not to have soft matzah. The fact that our matzah is thin, there's a minog Ashkenaz to have thin matzah. Right, but not necessarily hard. The Ramah said nothing about hard. He just said thin. Right, but as we've seen, you can have thick or thin, soft matzah. So fine, you're allowed technically to have matzah which is up to a tefach thick. The Ramah says not to use those, but the Ramah never said anything about soft. So he said there's no such minagra Ashkenaz. It's a historical fluke that Ashkenazim, because we were trying to make thin matzahs and machines make really good thin, hard matzahs, we went to thin, and they last longer, and whatever. But there's no minhag Ashkenaz not to have soft matzah. You want to have a soft matzah that's thin? Gezun de hey, go ahead. That's Rav Shechter. All the way to the other extreme is, if you look at number 16 rather, is what's quoted in the name of Rav Eliashiv. I couldn't find, like, I don't know if Rav Eliashiv wrote an original source for it, but this is the source I can find. Which is, this came up too, this is a machlokas in Australia. So the Rabbinical Council of Victoria wrote as follows. This is their statement. For immediate release, it has been brought to the attention of the Rabbinical Council of Victoria that despite it having expressed grave concerns over the availability of soft lafa-style matzah before Pesach last year, this product had once again become available to the public for purchase and consumption. The RCV therefore wishes to reiterate its stance on this matter. And following consultation with local kashrus experts, strongly recommend against the consumption or ownership of these matzahs during Pesach. All member rabbis of the RCV have been appraised of the halakhic issues involved. Should consumers seek further information, we urge them to consult their rav or kashrus authority as a matter of priority. Additionally, please be advised that the supplier of these matzahs has stated in his website that Yosef Shalom Yashiv Shlita, a leading halakhic authority in Israel, inspected these matzahs and stated the matzah of this nature would be perfectly kosher for Pesach for Jews of all backgrounds and traditions. Rav Eliashiv was subsequently approached about this matter and has expressly requested that the following statement be publicized in his name. Asur, Lotet, Hechsher, Lamasot, Rakot, Lekilot, Ashkenaz, Kizu, Pirtsa. It is forbidden to give a Hechsher to soft matzah for Ashkenazi community because this is a breach of tradition. Biadud Ashkenaz, Ein Alzem Masoret, V'af Pam, Lonagu, Le'afsher, Achilat, Matzah, Rakot. There is no tradition among Ashkenazi Jewry to consume soft matzah, and they have never allowed the eating of soft matzah. The above statement by Rabbi Yashiv relates to the issue of breaking a long-standing tradition and community, which is quite apart from the halachic problems associated with the production of such matzah. Wishing the community a kosher and joyous Pesach, Rabbinical Council of Victoria. So the other extreme, Rabbi Yashiv says, no, the fact that Ashkenazim don't have soft matzah is a minhag. Right? We have a minhag not to have soft matzah. Rav Asher Weiss has a middle position. Rav Asher Weiss notes that soft matzah had been the norm in the time of the Gemara. Right? I just summarized it for you in 18. And therefore, Mikra Adini thinks, like Rav Shechter, you really should be allowed to have soft matzah. And he doesn't think there's a minog to be osir. He thinks the minog was to be mahadir, like Rav Shechter said, to make it thin, but not necessarily make it hard, just to make it thin. So that's what he thinks Mikra Adin. But he's worried because he said, on the other hand, maybe because of all the chumrah of chametz and because of al tito shtaris imecha, noting that thick matzah was forbidden by Chirim, he said thick matzah does seem to be osur for Ashkenazim, and Ashkenazim practically only have have hard matzah, so he said maybe there's a Chirim against it, or at least against thick matzah, but maybe that was only for that time. So he's not really sure. He thinks Mikra Din is probably fine. He knows that there seems to have been a Chirim at some point against thick matzah, but that may be only thick matzah, not soft matzah, and even that Chirim of the Chassam Sofer may have only been in his time. But he's worried because the reason that we did come to the point we do is because, as Zivotofsky and Greenspan note, a series of chumrot about chametz, he said maybe there's some sort of minog, Ashkenaz, not to have it. So therefore his conclusion is that lechatchila you shouldn't have it. But let's say you're sick and can't handle hard matzah. So he said if you can have a little bit of hard matzah, but he really can't, since Me'ikra Adin, he thinks it's probably mutter, so he would tell you to be mutter neder, just in case it is a minhag, right? Right? Again, he said, it's not Me'ikra Adin, it's l'ravcha de milsa, but if you're sick and you can't handle the hard matzahs, then he thinks you can revert to what's Me'ikra Adin. So again, what we've shown is historically, right, soft matzah does seem to have been the original. At some point, we moved not necessarily towards hard matzah, but to thinner matzahs, which eventually became thin, hard matzahs. Does that reality create a minhag? So Yashiv seems to think, yes, at this point there's a minhag Ashkenaz only to have hard matzah, therefore Ashkenazim can't have soft matzah. Rav Shechter, the other extreme, thinks, no, there's only a minhag Ashkenaz to have thin matzah, but Ashkenazim are fully allowed to have soft matzah as long as it's thin. And Rav Asher, who thinks that Me'ikra Adin is probably true, that Ashkenazim are allowed to have soft matzah, which was the original matzah. Ashkenazim maybe aren't allowed to have thick matzah, but even that he's not convinced of. He thinks that might only be in the time of the Chassam Sofer, but okay, at least there may be a minhag against having thick matzah. And therefore, l'halacha, he thinks that an Ashkenazi should avoid thin matzah, but if it's impossible because he's sick and he really can't handle hard matzah, so be matzah neder in case this has a din minhag, but then he can revert to the Ikar Din, he can have soft matzah. Now, as I noted, just the two last points is that, first of all, again, even if you think, and ask your own Rav, even if you think you can have soft matzah, that doesn't mean you can have all soft matzah, right? You still need to, just like with anything else, get one that has a reliable hechsher. The second thing is that, practically, at least in Toronto, this is not really a shayla, because even apparently the real Sephardim don't have soft matzah because it just isn't sold here. But in theory, right, if you got it, then you could ask your Rav based on the machloka that we've seen here. So that, Echad Kasher V'Sameach, and we'll pick up again Shavuos time.